Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
The topic for today's show is something that's fun to talk about, but I hope I never have to do it again. Please, Lord, I do not want to have to do this again. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. Monday, Wednesday, we talk apologetics, theology, how to explain and defend the Catholic faith, but on Fridays, we talk about whatever I want to talk about, any kind of unusual or interesting topic. And today, I want to talk about dating, because I was asked to give a talk at a Catholic young adult group, and they specifically asked, could you give a practical talk on dating? Like, just not so much a theological reflection, but how do Catholics date successfully? My wife and I, we often speak to younger people in different communities, and they'll share with us, dating is really hard. I want to get married. I can't really find the right person. And Laura and I remember that. And that's why I am so grateful I don't have to be in that anymore, because I've found Laura. I have found the love of my life. I want to be on top of a mountain and share that with everyone. And that's why I always tell, don't get hit by a bus. Don't eat bad sushi and get food poisoning. Don't die on me. You're not dying on me today, because I don't want to have to go back to dating. You might say, well, Trent, why don't you just be a widower? And I might if something happened to Laura. But I also have three small children. I have three little boys. I would be sad if something happened to Laura. I want them to have a mom in their lives. I want them to have a solid Catholic mom. So odds are, if something did happen to Laura, I would probably choose to get remarried. But thankfully, nothing is going to happen. Not being presumptive, but nothing's going to happen, because I really don't want to go back to dating. Dating was hard. I don't want to do that again. And so I was asked to give this talk, and I said, all right, I'll give the talk. And I'm not a dating expert. I'm not Hitch. That movie's actually not very good with Will Smith. I mean, it's entertaining, like Cotton Candy is entertaining, but the movie Hitch, where he plays like the cynical dating coach and all that, I'm not that person. I have made a lot of mistakes in this arena in my life. And so I see there's a great demotivators poster. Have you ever seen those motivational posters, where it has like a picture of an eagle and it says leadership, show others how high you can fly, or something corny like that? I love demotivator posters. Demotivator posters that take the opposite. Teamwork. And it shows a snowball running down a hill, and it says, never underestimate the damage caused by large groups of people. Obviously like an avalanche, things like that. A few other demotivators I like. Another one, this one's grim. Sacrifice. It says, big bold letters, sacrifice. And it says, at this company, all we ask is that you give us your heart. And it's a picture of an Aztec temple. But there's one that has a ship sinking, okay? And it has a ship that's sinking, and it says, mistakes. And underneath it, the message is, maybe the purpose of your life is to serve as a warning to others. Maybe that's your grand purpose, is to be a warning to others. So this is what I learned from my mistakes and what I made, and I hope it's helpful for others. I'm going to give you the dry run of the talk that I will share more with this young adult group here in a few weeks. All right, the first step in good Catholic dating. The biggest step is to understand that dating is not an end in and of itself. It's a means. It's a means to discern finding a spouse. And so if you just focus on dating as an end, it becomes stagnant, it becomes emotionally dependent, it becomes an opportunity for unchastity, and that's problematic. So the very first step, like how do I get out there, how do I date, how do I find the right person, is long, long before you would ask someone out or accept an invitation to go out on a date. So think about the movie Jerry Maguire, right? You complete me. The problem here, and I understand that marriage, I feel like Laura and I do complete each other, and the poet John Donne was right, no man is an island. But the problem is, I think a lot of people enter into dating because they feel like there's something missing in their own life. Maybe they feel lonely, they want physical intimacy, they want emotional intimacy, they want to catch up with all of their friends who are married, They want children. And each of these desires in and of themselves, it's not a bad thing. Children are a good thing. Physical intimacy is a good thing. These things are good, but pursuing them as ends in and of themselves in order to fill a void in your own life, that creates a relationship with the other person you're dating. It's not a gift of self in the relationship. It's more like finding what you're lacking and you're taking from that person, even if you're being nice about it. And so it can create a lot of dysfunction out in the dating world where you see other people not as children of God who are offering themselves as a gift to someone, hopefully in marriage, but as someone that can help you fill a void in your own life. You know, it's like being friends with somebody who's really smart and helps you with your homework only because the primary thing on your mind is getting help with your homework. That's a kind of an exploitative relationship. And the same thing can happen in dating as well, where people end up being exploitative in that regard. So I would say the first step to be in successful Catholic dating is to be in a position where you feel like you don't want to date people necessarily. This is a danger. I mean, you don't want to get too far into that and think, I don't need anybody else. I'm totally fine. You don't want to get that far. But you don't want to be in the position where you feel like you're going to die unless you find the right person. So I would say wait to discern marriage, because dating is for discerning marriage. So wait until you are financially, emotionally, and spiritually ready for marriage. Okay, I think that makes a lot of sense. That's why I think dating for high schoolers is often a bad idea, because if the goal of dating is to discern marriage, what do you do if you're in a practical position? Let's say you're 15 years old. Now, let's say you're a 15-year-old boy, especially. You might not be in a position to marry someone and provide for a family for another decade, at the earliest, possibly. At least like another 5 years, if not longer than that. And so that can make it very, that can make it very difficult to maintain chastity, to maintain emotional health. I think that all has to be taken into account. So build up your own sense of, I don't want to say independence, but become a whole and healthy person so that in dating and discerning marriage, you're giving the gift of yourself to someone, they're sharing the gift of themselves, and you complete each other, not because each of you has a serious deficit, but because each of you complements each other. Like, I am this introverted kind of melancholic, and I'm complimented by Laura's bubbly, sanguine, extroverted nature. So we complete each other in that way, but we're each solid, independent individuals. We don't need the other person for a basic need to be fulfilled. So financial, emotional, spiritual health. Make sure that you have your house in order. You have a solid prayer life, a solid friendship community, that you financially, at the very least, have a healthy sense of understanding finances, even if you're paying down debt or things like that, that you feel like you control money, money doesn't control you. That's one of the number one things that people fight about in marriage. So first step is becoming that whole and healthy individual that other people would want to date, that you want to offer to others, and that you're not desperately clinging to others to fill a void in your life. I think that's easily a number one here. I think I am rambling a little bit, so when I give the talk, I'll be a bit pithier in that regard. I'll play off the room. We'll see what happens. But for you all listening, I think this is solid advice. And number two, also in this preparation period, pray for your future spouse. I remember doing this all the time when I was a teenager, when I was in college. Pray for your future spouse. Pray for the people that you date, even if they don't end up being your future spouse, because you want to keep God at the center of all of your relationships. All right, so let's say that you're there, though, and you feel like you're ready to discern marriage and you want to meet people. What do you do? That's the number one question that is, how do you meet good Catholic people? And so there's a variety of ways to do that. I would say the biggest thing here is to make yourself available to others. So that can take place either at a local level or at a global level through something like online dating. And both of these things have pitfalls. Whether you choose the local option or the global option. So let's say you take the local option. It's more the traditional route, right? You go to events, young adult events, for example. And it's hard when you get out of college to meet people. I remember that college, there's always a lot of events where people get together or you have shared interests, even just meeting together to study or to take a break from studying. So it's easy to get together. Outside of college, though, it can be a lot more difficult to be able to do that. But there's usually a lot of young adult events, and it involves you know, getting out of your comfort zone. You might want to stay at home, and I'm an introvert. I understand this. Stay at home by yourself or only with close friends or being with family, but that's going to really limit your ability to meet others. So just making yourself available in things that are, you know, holy and fun endeavors. Maybe it's ultimate frisbee. Maybe it's art classes. Maybe it's going to young adult talks. And there's other places, even at church or at the workplace, where you can make yourself available to others. Now, here's the pitfall, of course. When you make yourself available within the local group, things can be awkward. If you ask someone out, you know, or dating, especially in the work environment, you have to be careful there because sometimes that can be illegal or not allowed, like dating between a supervisor and a lower employee or, you know, things like that. You know, that's not the case. It can be difficult to form these bonds with people in your own little communities because then if things don't work out, sometimes it can be awkward. And so here, this is where I think advice that I'm going to give later down the line can help here and to ease that fear in the local dating. That the advice I would give later down the line is don't be super serious super quickly. That if you treat dating in a very casual way to discern marriage, and you can discern a person is not right for you without heavily investing emotional and physical intimacy, it takes away that awkwardness. And that's really good. So I'll get to that shortly. So I think making yourself available locally is really helpful, getting out of one's comfort zone to do that. And then the next step will be initiation and accepting initiation. I'll get to that here. But getting yourself out there. That's the local level you can do that. Then there's the global level, right? We have online Catholic dating. You have Catholic Match. My friend Chuck has a great website, Catholic Chemistry, that I think is really cool. And so there, that allows you to meet, and I know success stories from people who have gone on online dating, and they quickly found someone who was great for them, and then they got married, and it works. But then there's a lot of online dating horror stories as well. But there's also a lot of horror stories from dating someone locally in your own community, right? So that in and of itself shouldn't count against online dating or Catholic dating websites. So there, in using those websites, I think what's important is to be honest with others. You want to be honest, but you don't also want to be careless, right? You might say, honestly, this is me, and you put up a picture that's sloppy, and you barely fill out the profile. Well, okay, you're being, it's like when I roll out of bed in the morning, I could say, well, I'm being honest, this is who I am. Well, no, when I go to a job interview, when I go to church, I dress up, I present the best version of myself. And that's the same thing whether you're local dating or global dating. You want to present the best version of oneself while still being honest in that regard when it comes to dating websites. And remember, and once again, not taking it too seriously. It's a way to meet people. And most often in the dating world, you know, sometimes people get lucky. The first person they meet, they're right for them and they get married and that's awesome. A lot of other times it doesn't work out. And that's okay. And it's okay. You have to be able to understand that. And it's a good thing. Just because someone may not be interested in you or you're not interested in them, it doesn't mean that they're a bad person or you're a bad person. You know, there are activities or other things that other people enjoy that I don't particularly enjoy. Doesn't mean those activities are bad. It's just not what I prefer. And that's okay. But not that I'm saying people are mere activities. You understand the comparison that I'm making here. One thing I would watch out for, though, when it comes to especially dating online or even in local Catholic communities, there you can sometimes suffer from this analysis paralysis. You get this feeling that there are so many options, so many people out there. Who do I pick? Like there's so many, especially if you do online dating and go to different dating websites, there are all of these choices. And even if someone, you know, you're interested in them, there can be this nagging fear in the back of your mind, like, well, what if somebody out there is better for me than this person? And you feel like you don't want to commit because, well, what if someone out there was better for me and I miss out on that person? Here's the thing. There is always going to be somebody better for you out there. There are 7 billion people in this world. That means there's like 3 billion people. Well, I'll knock it down from like married people, you know, single. I'm sure there's a billion people out there, probably a billion people 500 million people out there who are possibly compatible. And so out of that combination, I'm sure there's at least one person that might be better for you than the person you end up dating, the person you end up marrying. When Laura and I were talking about this, Laura is so funny. She says, oh no, everybody settles, right? Everybody settles. And that's good. You love that person, even if you end up settling. And I said, well, not everybody settles. You found the perfect man, didn't you? She said, of course, totally. No, my wife thinks, you know, highly of me and such, but that's what happens, right? There's always going to be other people who are out there. The question is not, could there be someone better? The question is this person perfect for you? It's not, is this person your soulmate? And I don't believe in the concept of soulmates. That, like, obviously God knows in his perfect foreknowledge who you're going to choose to marry. So you might have a soulmate in that sense, but it's not like that God had selected from eternity, you must marry this person, and if you mess up on the first date and you don't marry this person, you're doomed. That's not really how it works, okay? God will bless. You can make a lot of decisions, and it's not like God says there's only one right decision. There can be many people that God, you know, God would bless your marriage because they're a good person for you. It's not necessarily one. So be careful of analysis paralysis. All right, so let's say you're getting out there, and you're meeting a lot of different individuals, whether online or offline, and someone seems really interesting to you. Maybe, you know, she's cute. She has an infectious laugh. She's really good at imitating other people. I'm talking about my wife, of course. She's holy. She always really wants to go to mass. She speaks her mind. She's happy to go out on a university campus and dialogue with professors on abortion and tell them what. And so you think, I should really ask that person out. That person could be marriage material. What do you do? I remember, it's so nerve-wracking. Oh man, I remember how nerve-wracking it was when you go. And actually, with Laura, we started offline. I had met her through a pro-life event. So it's interesting here. Sometimes there's a mix. So I met Laura first time I met her, she came to a pro-life outreach at a university campus, and we started getting to talk. So the very first time we met, it was in person that we got to know each other. But then she went back to New Mexico, went back to her life because we were traveling to go to this event together. But we had connected on social media, and I connected her, talked with her a few times since then. And I just felt like, okay, I'm going to send Laura a message, and I might be in the same town where she is soon, and maybe we could go out. What did I ask her? I should really have had Laura here to get the full story. Maybe I'll bring Laura in for a future episode. But I sent her a message saying, can I take you out to dinner when I'm in town? And she responded back, yes. I was like, oh, but I remember when you ask and you type it out and your stomach feels like it has a bunch of pins and nails and the jacks. You remember jacks, ball and jacks, the little spiky things? They're not spiky, but you know what I'm talking about. And they're in your stomach. And they're just going around, you're like, and your heart's like beating out of its chest. And it's hard enough, especially, I mean, I did that on a Facebook message because we didn't live in the same place. But I had been in other places where I had gotten to know nice young Catholic women. And then I asked them. And frankly, sometimes I wasn't forthright about it. I would say, do you want to hang out? And we would hang out, and then kind of we were dating. And it was like, wait, what happened? I thought we were hanging out 1 minute and now we're dating. I don't think that's a... If I had to go back, I think I would have been more forthright. And for some people, I was forthright. I used the D word. I said, hey, can I take you out on a date on Saturday? And I think I would love to see people return to that. But once again, not take it too seriously. Not take it too seriously. And understand it's a way to get to know people. It's a way to see if someone's right for you. Because I think some people, you know, it's like, can I take you on a date? It's like, do you want to marry me? I know people don't really think that, but it's almost like that pops in your head. Like, well, maybe, I don't know. Like, but let's cool our jets a little bit. Let's just get to know each other. And it's a way that if you do it, and my biggest advice here, well, I guess let me start with the initiation, because you're initiating it. But knowing going forward, you're not asking someone, asking someone on a date should not be like a mini engagement. Because dating should not be a mini marriage. And when dating is treated like a mini marriage, that's problematic. You create too much commitment, and you're not able to discern if this person is right for you. So I would say here, if you can take it less seriously for all parties to know, hey, this is just a way for us to get to know each other a little bit more and see if this works. And if it doesn't, no hard feelings in that regard. And so I would just recommend people give one another a chance. But you should be discerning. You want to be careful. Because I think for guys, you don't want to like ask out every single girl that you see on earth, because then it feels like it's more exploitative, that you're not being discerning to find a particular person who is right for you for marriage. You're just like, you're fishing, basically. You're casting a wide trawling net. And rather, it should be more deliberate in that regard. But that first part, oh man, the asking somebody out, and that's the guy's perspective. I don't know the girl's perspective as much, waiting to be asked out. And I think traditionally, I think that's how it should go. Now, girls might say, well, am I supposed to be passive? Am I supposed to just sit at home by the phone in my 1950s plaid skirt or, you know, whatever, waiting for some boy to come pin me? You remember that in the 50s, you know, you got a pin to be engaged. So am I supposed to be completely passive? No, not at all. This is kind of this is more my practical advice for young people. I would say guys make the first move, girls send the first signal. Dating is a lot like dancing. I would step on people's toes, both in dancing and in dating, tried to learn my lessons of being awkward and understanding things. But I think that can be a helpful balance here, that maybe as a guy, you notice someone, you know, is just like, oh, wow, I think there's a lot of potential there. And I think, though, you should be somewhat cognizant if that person has at least a bare minimum mutual feeling towards you. And you can sense that. And so for girls, I would say you don't have to be passive. Girls send the first signal. They let a guy know, hey, I'm really comfortable with you. I really enjoy your company and would like to spend more time with you. Like with Laura, when I was with her, she would always laugh explosively when I would tell like little jokes, even if they weren't particularly funny. And I'm like, okay, maybe there's a bond here. Is that something's going on here? Then I come later to find out Laura just laughs explosively because she's super joyful. I'm like, oh, and I told her, oh, you got to be careful. This is back, I think, when we were in our dating phase. I said, Laura, like touching a guy's arm and laughing at his jokes, like that's flirting. And she said, oh my goodness, I had no idea. And I said, yeah, you know, so what's going on with us exactly? Well, no, that was after we had started dating, going out on dates and then being a boyfriend, girlfriend. So guys make the first move, girls send the first signal. Be respectful of people's boundaries. So, guy, you ask them, hey, can I take you out on a date Saturday? And if a girl says, oh, that's really kind of you, but I just don't really see us having a relationship like that or dating, but thank you. Guys, you really should just drop it at that point. Be respectful of people's boundaries. Don't, like, keep hounding someone over and over again. But girls, also, you have to be explicit about things. Sometimes this can happen. Guy asks you out, oh, I'm really busy, but definitely some other time. And you keep being busy over and over and over again, just so that you don't have the heart to tell the guy you're not really interested. I had a rule, actually, when I, during my dating experience, if I asked someone out and they said they were busy, but they'd love to some other time, if they did that twice, I took a hint. If that happened twice, I would say, okay, I get it. You're not really interested. You don't have their heart to tell me, so I'm gonna drop this. And I think that overall you should be respectful of people's boundaries, even if you make a false inference here in that regard. I told Laura this, and she said, "Oh my goodness, I had no idea. Sometimes I just get really, you know, forgetful, or I do have things, and I really was busy, and I like that person." I said, "Okay, then as a girl, if you really are busy, but you would want to go out with that person, you should say this: Oh wow, I wish I could, but I'm busy on Thursday. What about Saturday? What about Sunday afternoon?" And propose an alternative time. If it's just a vague, maybe some other time. When I was in the dating sphere, I always took that as, okay, I can take a hint. You're not interested. That's fine. All right, but let's say you do go out. What kind of a date, you know, should you go on? And here I would say, look, keep it casual. And remember, it's about discernment. You don't want to accelerate the relationship so fast it turns into a kind of miniature marriage, because then you can't discern. One of my favorite stories about dating is not actually about me. It's about two people that I look up to as role models. When I was younger, they were kind of role models for me. And that was Corey and Topanga from Boy Meets World. Boy Meets World from the late 90s, early 2000s. And I guess maybe I liked it because people always said that I looked like Corey Matthews a little bit. And I might have had a teeny tiny crush on Topanga, like every other 12-year-old boy in 1997, you know. But it turns out, so they were, in the show, they were a couple. And they were, you know, young. They were in middle school, high school. And they said, in real life, they did actually go out on a date with each other, a real date. And they sat there and they said, this is so awkward. We probably shouldn't date. And he said, yeah, you're right. And so I love that they played a couple on this show. But when they went out on a real date and went out to dinner, they sat there and it just felt so awkward. Like, no, this isn't really going to work. So that's why my big advice then, when you go out on dates, it's to get to know someone. It should be casual and incremental. Like the first date should not be watching Netflix at home. Come on, you're not going to have good conversation if you're just staring at a TV screen, wondering if you're going to make out later. You know, TV, movies in general, I don't think it's a great idea. It also shouldn't be super fancy, like this giant romantic dinner and gesture on the first date. I recommend casual and incremental. Being together more, you know, casual, and it grows and grows and grows. And then eventually you start to see if there's romantic attraction, there's compatibility there. So I think starting with coffee, lunch, mutual activity, something that's not super expensive, that is brief, maybe it's like an hour long, and it's a way to get to know each other. And you do that over and over again. And so, oh, by the way, rule here is guy pays. Guys, you have to pay. And even if it doesn't work out, you know, that's the price for being a guy. And at the very least, if you can show a nice young lady a good time and she had fun and she never felt weirded out or creeped out, good for you. Being a chivalrous good man. That's your job. Your job is to be chivalrous and be a good man in a world where there's not a lot of good guys. So find ways to be creative to get to know each other. I'll share one with you from when Laura and I were dating. This was super fun. I took Laura out to a bookstore. It was a Barnes & Noble that had a coffee shop in the bookstore. And we went out. And we grabbed, each of us had to pick up three books we would buy if we had the money and wanted to buy it that day. So we grabbed three, each of us got three books from the bookstore that we would buy if we, you know, just had $100 on us, whatever, you know, money to spend. And we went and sat down and we got coffee. Well, I got a hot chocolate and Laura got a coffee because I'm a child and I don't like coffee. And we just talked about what books we got. And I think Laura got like a travel book and I got a book on apologetics, totally. And we talked about why we would buy those particular books. And that was so fun to get to know who we each of us are as persons. And that's the goal here in the initial dating phase, is to really find out who the other, what the other person is like. And so when you do that, you want to be honest. You don't want to be a slob. Put out the best version of yourself, but you want to be honest with that person. And sometimes I was not honest. I'll give you an example of this. Sometimes when I would take girls out on dates, I had this CD, right? Because I played things on a CD, not like an iPhone or anything like that. And so I had a CD that I called the girl CD. And it was songs that I would play in my car if I was going out on a date with a girl that I just thought made me seem cool. And mostly it was acoustic guitar. So Eric Clapton, Dispatch, original Jason Mraz recorded at Java Joe's. So I'm like, oh, this is really cool. This isn't even radio Jason Mraz. This is the original from Java Joe's right after he was home listening, whatever. It was like this all kind of acoustic guitar kind of stuff. And they're like, oh, I love this song. Oh, it's so great. And I did like the music, but it wasn't my favorite. But it was just something that really set the mood and was cool music, but it wasn't totally who I was. And if you do that on dates, you can only keep up that facade for so long. It's just, you need to show who you are as really as you. Don't come on too strong, but you want to be honest. And so with Laura, where I realized that I could be honest with her was I put in my other CD, the CD that I would play when I didn't have anyone in my car. And that CD had Phil Collins, lots of Peter Cetera. Do-do-do-do-do-do. So wait, where does it go? So now the glory of love. And so I know it's dorky. Phil Collins, Peter Cetera. Also a lot of 80s rock on there too. I had some Bon Jovi. Shot through the heart and you're to blame. All kinds of different stuff on there. And I played that for Laura. And she liked that. She thought it was fun. Sometimes she would make fun of it. Like my Peter Cetera, she would say, Trent, I feel like we're going to the doctor's office. This is the music I would hear when I was a kid and I was reading highlights and waiting to go to the doctor's. But she appreciated that. And so we could be honest with each other in that regard. All right. So let's say you're going out on a few dates and this person really seems like they are right for you. Well, then you might go steady, quote unquote. Here you agree to not date other people. And I think that's okay. The very first time, if you're just going on casual dates, you should be free to go on casual dates with lots of people because you're not being physically intimate. You're not in a relationship. You're getting to know people. And that should be allowed and encouraged. You know, in the 50s, they say, oh, you know, girls would go out on Bobby and Ricky and all different guy every Saturday took me out. And maybe you go out with them again or maybe you don't. But eventually you might meet someone. Yeah, this could really work. Let's date exclusively and really focus on discerning marriage and finding out these important questions and differences between us. But here's the thing. You're in an intensive period of discernment. I would say the most important thing, though, to keep things going well is not accelerating the intimacy. That is my biggest advice to anybody in dating. Even if you're exclusive, don't accelerate the intimacy, physical intimacy, even emotional intimacy, like daydreaming about being married to this person. Well, you're still discerning all of that. Don't plan your wedding while you're still figuring out if this is a person that would be suitable for you. And so, I'll give this example. I think this is fair. I always got to be careful sharing my own personal life, what is and isn't appropriate. There is one young woman who is an ex-girlfriend of mine. But my wife really enjoys this ex of mine and sees her as just a wonderful person, has no weird feelings about her, and nothing like that because she's a very virtuous individual. And when we were dating, she was actually a chastity speaker. And so we dated for several months, and we dated, we were discerning, but we didn't actually express any serious physical intimacy. I mean, I would give her like a kiss on the forehead, you know, good night. But she was very clear. She didn't want to engage in physical intimacy that was actually common in a lot of other dating relationships. And I appreciated that we had that standard in our relationship because it kept things very clear and understanding. And then when we discerned, yeah, maybe this isn't going to really work out, and we'd actually worked together, it wasn't awkward. It wasn't weird because we hadn't built up a kind of intimacy. You know how that happens, right? You have an ex-boyfriend or an ex-girlfriend and it's awkward around them as if they're like your ex-wife or ex-husband, but that's not how it should be. So I'm grateful, and I think Laura is grateful to this young Catholic woman because she was a model of chastity and virtue and maturity. And so that was like a really ideal dating situation. Now, I'm not saying that to date successfully, you can't kiss on the lips until you're married or engaged or something like that. I'm not drawing these hard and fast rules for people. You have to use your own conscience to decide that. But I will say that in just really having a slow burn when it comes to the intimacy, because it clouds your judgment, especially if you're really physically intimate, engaging in activities that are more ordered towards preparation for the marital act, your brain gets scrambled with hormones and oxytocin, the bonding mechanism, and all of that stuff. It's just not that helpful. And then when things don't work out, you feel like you already invested so much in this other person. You feel like your heart got ripped out. And it does. It's hard, you know? And so that was one relationship of the past that I'm grateful for. And I think Laura is grateful for, too. So that would be my other advice. When you're more in the serious discerning phase, just be careful not to roll out the intimacy beyond when it is appropriate. I think that is a key here. And then to involve other people in your discernment. So don't just only go out on dates with each other. Be around each other's friends. Be around each other's family. And notice, by the way, keep an eye out on how does your girlfriend talk to her father? How does your boyfriend talk to his mother? Because how they treat those people is how they're going to treat you. You know, and so see what kind of family dynamics that they have. And so this takes some time to be able to figure this out, but have other people involved, obviously, because you also want to watch out for warning signs, red flags, and you need really be open to other people's judgment here to not be trapped in an abusive, a controlling relationship, an isolating relationship, to keep all of that into perspective, always focusing on the one question: does this person lead me closer to Christ or away from Christ? Not are they fun, not are they really attractive. Those are always a bonus. I've got that with my wife, so that's fun. But also I get the other great thing. She leads me closer to Christ. And that is the fundamental number one. So to discern this, by the way, the other trap I would watch out for is not date for a really long time. I know somebody who dated a guy for 10 years. She dated a guy for 10 years, and then one day he broke up with her. And then like a year later, he was married to somebody else. And how awful. Because for those 10 years, you're off the market. I'm not trying to be crass about anything, but it's not like in the movies, right? Those romantic comedies where the girl is dating a jerk and the guy who's really right for her overcomes the obstacles and wins her over. That's just not how it works in real life. In real life, it's, I have a boyfriend. I don't mean to make fun of women with that voice, but I feel like, I have a boyfriend. Even if he's not really great for you, it's like, I have a boyfriend. Okay, it's just, guys can't, you know, it's not, I think maybe 50 years ago, it would have been okay to say, I know you're dating Ricky over there, but Ricky's a chump. I think you should go out with me instead. That was more 1920s Trent than 1950s Trent. It just doesn't really work like that because a lot of people treat dating kind of like mini marriages in that respect. And so if you draw it out for 10 years, a guy is just, she has a boyfriend. I can't ask her out. Because we treat it like mini miniature marriages. I'm going to be honest with you. My feeling about this is if there is no ring, it is not a thing. If there is no ring, it is not a thing. If someone is dating someone else and you think they're really, really right for you, I say go for it to say, I'd like to take you on a date. I like you. And now I don't think that you shouldn't, you know, cheat, obviously. Maybe this other person say, yeah, maybe the guy I'm dating is not right for me. And you end that relationship and you pursue something with somebody else. I know I'm crossing the line. Trent's telling people to cheat on everybody. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying if there is no ring, it's not a thing. Either a marriage ring or a wedding or an engagement ring. Engagement ring means you got some serious skin in the game here. Now you're really close to marriage. And by the way, engagement is still a period of discernment. I used to work for the Diocese of Phoenix for the Office of Marriage, and I would set up the marriage, the educational seminars for engaged couples. And every year, I would have to process refunds for people whose engagements broke off. It's still not marriage yet. You know, you're still not married. That's why I would tell the engaged couples, don't have sex. Don't engage in activities that lead up to sex because you're not married yet. It may feel like it, but just like how you wouldn't want a doctor operating on you who had not passed his final boards, you're almost a doctor, but who do you want operating on you? A doctor or almost a doctor? Much the same way, almost married is not married. You don't need a divorce to end an engagement. You can just really just bye, not talk to you anymore. I mean, that's rude, but you're not married yet. So I would say there, going back to my main point is if you date someone for years and years and years on end, you lose the opportunity to really meet other people who might have been right for you. And I really do feel like by 1 year, you know or you don't know. Don't get stuck in analysis paralysis. You know or you don't know. I think a year is long enough. Now, you might have a situation, military, long distance. Laura and I, our engagement had to be several years because I was working on my career and Laura was finishing nursing school. And I was in Phoenix. Laura was in New Mexico. And nursing school in Phoenix was like by lottery. It was hard. It would have taken her three times as long to finish nursing school in Phoenix. So we agreed to be long distance and engaged. And we did that for 18 months, 2 years, it felt like. It was hard, but it was worth it. And we had a firm commitment in that regard. But I would say aimless dating where you just, and what's worse is maybe you don't break up. Maybe you just date for 10 years. It's just, and then you slide into marriage. Well, we might as well get married, been together this long anyways. That's not discerning. And so what was interesting here, you know what's funny? Think about guys becoming priests. For a guy to become a priest, he takes as long as 8 years to discern whether he should be a priest. goes through all of this lengthy process of preparation for the priesthood. For marriage, it's just, oh, you've been dating? Well, we got one class at the diocese on life skills and one class on theology of the body. Here you go. Good luck. I think there needs to be, I think we changed the Diocese of Phoenix. It went from a 6-month marriage prep period to a 9-month, and we threw in natural family planning courses. And some people got really mad. They said, well, I'm getting married in 3 months. You know, they had met and they were engaged. And it's like, well, we're going to get married in 3 months. Well, you need to prepare. You're only thinking about the wedding, not the marriage. You're doing wedding prep, not marriage prep. And also, this continues on long after you're married. That's my last advice for dating. I'm not always perfect at this. I try. I'm not perfect. Far from it. You have to keep dating after you're married. Dating is not some kind of mercenary activity to snag somebody. I mean, just the other night, Laura and I went out for our wedding anniversary. 9 years. 9 years with my beloved. I loved that. And it was just wonderful. But to go out and spend that time, and it's hard with kids and just all the rigmarole. Is rigmarole a word? Yeah, I think it is. It's hard, but you have to keep that focus, that to be a strong mother and father for your children, you have to have a strong husband-wife relationship and to make that time for one another. So keep dating after marriage. I ain't perfect at it. I'm always trying to learn that. But that would be my advice to you. Once again, all of this, I'm not a dating expert by any means. When I talk about mistakes that people have made, I've made a lot of these. I haven't dated anybody for 10 years. I didn't make that one. But a lot of these, I've had these pitfalls as well. And my goal here is not to be, by the way, my goal here is not to be judgmental towards people or say, you're bad, you're an awful person because you choose to date this way or not that way. It really comes from a place in my heart where I just want to help people to really lead them to Christ. And the sacrament of marriage leads people to Christ. So I lead people to the sacrament of marriage, leads them to Christ. And it's a beautiful mystery of our faith. And I would prefer people to skip over a lot of the mistakes that I made in that process. And maybe there's things I didn't cover here I could cover in some, kind of a future presentation. Wow, this went on way too long. I only wanted to talk to the young people for 15 or 20 minutes and do a lot of Q&A. I'm sure when I give this talk for them, it'll be shorter. Maybe giving it to you all is kind of a bit of help. In any case, thank you guys so much. Oh, I guess, one last thing. When you're in the steady period, you should actually ask, before you get married, you have to fill out this inventory. Like you take a big questionnaire to see if there's any red flags in your relationship that the church has you fill out. And honestly, I think couples should ask for that survey or for a similar questionnaire of like 100 questions you need to ask your spouse. And there's a book on this called The ABCs of Finding Your Future Wife, or The ABCs of Finding Your Future Husband. I think that's what the book is called. It has a chapter in there of the questions you should ask your spouse. Be discerning, be deliberate in finding out these things about another person, and always involve your community and keep your Christ community involved. Is there a third C? Chastity? You get the picture. All right, I rambled too much. Thank you guys so much, and I hope that you have a very blessed one.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.